this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time.
Welcome to Wellness and Dentistry. I am Dr. Martin Mendelson, one of your co-hosts. I am a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, thought leader, and author. In fact, my first book comes out later this year. And I'm joined by my dear friend and co-host, Dr. Kyle Stanley, who's a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness and dentistry. And if you're unfamiliar with us, we invite you to check out our respective links, websites, and course offerings on wellnessanddentistry.com. And if you've liked what you heard in the past or like what you hear today, come hang out with us for 2 days. We have our in-person course on mental and practice wellness or personal and professional wellness hosted at Glidewell Dental Laboratory in Irvine, California, this coming May 9th and 10th. And so today we are going to be talking about the times they are a-changin'. So that's my knee-jerk off-the-cuff title. What do you think of that? You like
yeah,
that?
No, I mean, the times are changing for the better.
Yeah.
I think so many times in dentistry, we're worried about doom and gloom, right? We're like, the corporates are taking over, robots are going to take over our jobs, insurance companies haven't raised their fees, dental school tuition is at an all-time high and it's been growing like crazy. And yes, all of those are true. However, one of the great positives that is happening is that people are starting to realize the importance of mental wellness.
Yep.
The fact that a dentist or a dental professional anywhere in the practice is a better dental professional, they do better work, they're better leaders when they're in a better mental state. Mm-hmm. And so how this whole idea started was Martin and I were talking before we pushed record, and we recently found out that California is actually the first state to make mental health CE part of core CE.
Yep.
So, you know, in California, we do 50 CE credits every 2 years. What this means is that it counts towards your core CE credits and not necessarily towards your elective CE credits.
Yes.
And that's a big step for our profession.
That's huge. Yeah, that's such a big deal. I know we were taking a look that, you know, North Carolina a couple of years ago came in with 1 hour every couple of years. And the way it's worded, our interpretation was it's a combination of substance abuse and mental health, which is great as well. And I think California taking a stand and saying, no, this is part of core CE is a really, really big deal. I mean, I'm super excited about that. So.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, Martin and I almost feel like we're celebrating today, really.
Yeah.
Because this is something that we've been pushing for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to see, especially for me being in California, Martin used to live in California for many years, seeing the California Dental Association take on, for example, whether in local groups like local dental associations or the state dental association, speakers like Martin and I, like I spoke at the Orange County Dental Association or Dental Society?
Society, I believe.
Society.
Yeah.
And Martin's actually the speaker for next year. I don't know if we're allowed to announce that yet, but the cat's out of the bag now.
Well, by the time this is released, we'll know. So,
yes. But, and, you know, also I've been brought on to speak for the California Dental Association to their advisory board. Mm-hmm. So people are starting to realize, oh my gosh, there's more than just clinical dentistry. And whether you like or dislike organized dentistry, and you know, there's positives and negatives with every organized dentistry group, they're starting to take some ownership over this. They're starting to put money towards this. They're starting to put effort towards this. And it's not going to be this problem that we just sweep under the rug like we've done for the last 50 plus years in this profession.
Absolutely. And I think, too, it really also speaks to the recognition that you never know who's in the audience. You're never going to know what they hear, what they don't hear, how it impacts them. And I told you this story. It's somewhat related, which is this. You and I have talked many times about how we feel like we're to some degree kind of like the OGs in this area because we're both kind of talking about this. And now every time I turn around, somebody else is talking about burnout or mental wellness, which is fantastic. I love that.
We can't be everywhere.
Yeah, we can't be everywhere. And
Although it may
so,
seem like that.
yeah. And so, I was in Dallas this past weekend. I was with the folks from Ideal Practices. And this woman came up to me and she said, I want you to know something that I used to listen to you when you used to open the Spear seminars for, to put this in a perspective, 5 to 10 minutes out of 2 days. And this woman said to me, she looked forward to what I would say every time because I wasn't talking about the clinical stuff. I was talking about how important it is to be present and to take this stuff back and learn with you or learn, take the curriculum rather and learn and grow your practice, et cetera. And she claimed that, or she shared rather, excuse me, that one comment, education without action's entertainment, caused her to start her first practice. And yes, that's not a mental wellness interaction. I realize that. While at the same token, having a state like California put a stake in the ground and say, this is important, just speaks to the fact that no, people are listening, even if you think they aren't, regardless of the topic that you're talking about.
Well, I've seen a huge uptick in me being invited to speak about this topic.
Yeah.
For those of you that have followed me or been aware of me for the last 15 years, is I spoke a lot about smile design and implants and full arch treatment and guided surgery and that for many years. And then it was back in 2018 that I started adding this as an option for me to speak about. But I have to be honest with you, for 2018, 2019, and 2020, almost nobody was picking this. I'd do two a year that would pick this topic. Now, I mean, 80% of what I'm getting invited to speak about is mental health. Last week, I was in just outside of Atlanta, a place called Warner Robins for a really great club called Spiller's Orthodontics, incredible orthodontic group that puts on a study club for their referrals. We had 300 people in the room,
That's
40
amazing.
doctors and all of their team had really great feedback. People said, I'm so glad that this wasn't clinical. I got so much out of this. I did my mentally resilient dentist master class that I do a few times a year online. We had over 800 people register for this
That's amazing.
from all over the world. And then just last night, I did another event for a local oral surgery group. And what's interesting with this oral surgery group is they're here in Southern California. I've done their event, it's probably my fourth time. So I think they had me in 2017 where I talked about lip lifts. And then I think they had me maybe in 2019 where I talked about implants. And then they had me maybe last year and I talked about aesthetics and facial flow and some of my research there. And so a lot of these people have built up, they know me, over the last few years. And so many of them last night came and said, this was the best one that I've seen. Like, this made the most impact for me. And I was talking with the oral surgeon, and both of them are of Asian descent, and a lot of the people in the study club are also of Asian descent. And they both said, this is so big for our community because especially in this community, in the Asian culture, this is something you don't talk about. This is something that you sweep under the rug, you bite your lip, you grit, you do it. And so he said, just to see some of the breakthroughs happening, he said, just to see people raise their hand and say, yes, I'm also going through something like this. He said, I think you broke a lot of these barriers, and I think we're going to be able to talk about this more in our study club. And this is a group that meets eight times a year.
That's great. That's fantastic. I mean, let's also give a couple shout outs. I mean, this is our joint and enterprise and partnership. We don't at this point have any sponsors for this podcast, but let's give some shout outs here because the times they are changing because Between us, let's start listing them out. Who are the companies that have been supportive? You've got GlideWell that hosts Lightside Live. You've got,
Weave.
Weave. You've got Mango. You've got Ivoclar that brought me into their North American sales meeting.
Care Credit.
CareCredit. You got Dental Warranty. You got I've been in
3Shape.
Reshape. Some big banks that I'm in negotiation with. So Dentsply. Don't forget about Dentsply. Particularly me, I'm not selling anything they sell. And yet all of them are just clamoring to work with me. I'm not sitting here saying they're all throwing money at me. That'd be nice, but they're, we're working in partnership, and in some cases there's some financial support, other cases there's logistical support, all that kind of stuff. But just the very fact that they're willing to even talk to me and us, it's a huge deal. And
Well,
so,
and again, this is such a testament to the times changing, is
yeah.
because in 2018, 19, and 20, before, when I was first starting to speak about this topic, I was trying to get sponsorship from some companies, and everyone was like, like, unless you're really promoting implants, you're promoting this, you're promoting that, we can't really do this. And now what we're seeing are companies that are saying, we're here to support our dentists. We know from a financial side that if they're doing better, they're going to buy more scanners. They're going to expand their office. They're going to place more implants. They're going to have more patients go through credit, you know. And it makes so much sense. And it's so nice to hear that, because I think before the pandemic, the dental industry was very transactional. Now, of course, transactions still happen, right? I mean, everyone has to get paid for what they do. But there is more of this idea. I almost think about it as like the ripple theory positivity of like, there's positivity rippling through our profession now.
Yeah,
And
100%.
that is so exciting to see, because really everybody rises with this, right? All boats rise with the high tide. It's
Absolutely.
the same thing.
And it's, obviously, well, I shouldn't say that. I'm assuming, falsely or correctly, that, many of the people that are listening to this are of like mind. Well, and I would also assume there are some people listening to this that are very much struggling. And so I guess, yes, the tides, they are changing. And at the same time, let's talk about if you or I, knowing what we know now, were in a situation of, worrying about our mental health, burnout, mental fitness, mental alertness, our ability to be there fully to provide patient care. If you were in a dark place today, Dr. Stanley, what would you do? Who would you reach out to? What would be like your first steps? Let's kind of talk about that.
Yeah, well, first I would say I would love if everybody had someone in their phone that is a dentist that they feel like they could be vulnerable with. This is very, very important. Whenever somebody, excuse me, sorry, I lost my voice at that lecture that I was talking about in Atlanta, and then I didn't talk for 4 days. We had 20 people over at my house and I didn't talk to anybody. And then I had, two evening events, so I'm still kind of recovering. So sorry about that. When we have people that are at their lowest point that feel alone and feel like they're the only ones and they don't have anybody that they can trust and be vulnerable with, this is unfortunately when we lose colleagues. And so I would say that would be number one, is think of who you can call. And if you don't have someone, start creating a relationship with somebody, a colleague. A dentist down the street. We've talked about this before. You're not in competition with these people. Or maybe you have a dental school friend that you haven't talked with. Maybe revitalize that relationship, even if they live in another state or even another country, and revitalize that relationship and discuss things more than just the clinical aspect. That would be my first thing, would be have someone you could reach out to. This was so important for me when I was in my dark time. I did have my brother and my father, who are both dentists, who have been through their struggles as well. And so when I called them, my brother was saying, like, yeah, I'm kind of going through something similar right now, And my dad said, well, right now I'm not, but when I was about Actually, Kyle, when I was about your age, I was
Yeah.
going through about the same thing. And it just made me feel like I wasn't the only one going through it.
Yeah.
The second thing that I'll say, and this one is not as easy, let's say, because it's more action, is understanding that dentistry is extremely challenging and that you can't show up and half-ass it. So,
Yeah.
what do I mean by that? It's like you can't show up and be behind the eight ball because you're going to have the patient that tells you they hate you. You're going to have the team member that shows up late. You're going to have the lab case that you have to send back. The implant's gonna not integrate. The crown's not
Yeah.
gonna fit. Something's gonna happen. So you have to make sure when you show up, you're rested, you're hydrated, you are in a good mental state. You're feeling good. You've got time to yourself, you've eaten right, you're gonna have time for lunch. All of those really physical properties
Yeah.
are so important. I remember when I was in my dark time, I was not doing any of that, by the way. I was
Yeah. Yeah.
staying up super late, reading
Yeah.
articles. I was not prioritizing my sleep. I was eating shit. I was not exercising. So I show up and I'm already in this sluggish, tired, annoyed kind of state. And then when some of these fairly normal stresses of dentistry happen, I'm much more likely to react
Yeah.
poorly, right? So to lash out at people, not think, or not live between the stimulus and the response. And then that creates even more stress.
Yeah, totally. And I'd like to interject here that when you're in that dark place and all those things are happening, or shall we say not happening, right? It can feel very overwhelming. It's like, where do you start? I think from my perspective as a coach, what I would say is make a list of those things. You know, sleeping well, eating well, being hydrated, getting your lunch. That's a common one that, I was guilty of that too.
Same here.
Getting your lunch, making sure that your schedule to the best of your ability at this time where you are in your career is structured in a way that's going to help support your physical and mental health because you're the one providing the care. So that I would hope would make sense, and I don't have to say anything more about that. So I would start by making a list of those things and think about for you, because everybody's different, which is the most important. And I would also think kind of parallel, which do I feel of these things would be the easiest, now it's a relative scale, to change starting tomorrow or this week the latest.
Yeah.
So if it's hydrating, great. I'm gonna go get a new water bottle tonight at whatever Walmart or whatever, and I'm gonna bring it into the office. So, taking that first step, focusing on your locus of control, will allow you to feel more in control. That will then allow you to spurn into greater levels of action, activity, accomplishment, feelings thereof, and keeping the ball rolling, keeping the flywheel.
It's funny that you talk about the importance of scheduling.
Yeah.
Last night after my lecture, the oral surgeon that put it on got up and said, I stopped working at 4 now. I stopped working at 4 now. I used to work till 5. But he said I would come home so sluggish, tired, exhausted. I would put my kids to bed and I would just crash. And I never had time to work out or exercise. And I was in a poor physical state. Oral surgery is very physical.
Oh my gosh.
And so he said, I stop treating patients at 4 now. I don't take any emergency patients unless they're from existing referrals. So, like, if the DSO down the street sends him
Yeah.
something that he's
Yeah.
not actually going to take the emergency call. And I thought that was so great. I actually told him the story about your friend, the oral surgeon that takes,
Yep.
90 minutes in the middle of the day. We've talked about it on the podcast before. And I think it was great for him as the leader, really, of
Yeah.
this study club that everyone really looks up to, for
Absolutely.
him to show that he has taken his schedule and made himself a priority. And he came up to me afterwards and he said, Kyle, I've completely changed this. He said, I used to take no vacation. Now I take 8 weeks of vacation.
Oh, I love this guy. I got to
And he
meet
said,
him.
yeah, he's awesome. And he said, could I make more money? Sure. He said, but
Yeah.
that money doesn't make a difference to me.
Nope.
He said, and even my wife now is so appreciative that I'm taking this time off, that I have time with my kids. And I mean, oral surgeons in general, they are hard workers. They
Oh,
work
yeah.
hard and
Oh, yeah.
they can get, just like all of us, they can get very consumed by their practice and more and more and more and more. And especially because I think specialists feel this often, you and I have heard this before, is they're kind of at the top of the mountain. And sometimes they feel like, well, if I don't take this case, who's going to take this case? So they have that challenge as well. So it's really great to hear this from this oral surgeon. And this is a practice that has grown 30% almost every year for the
That's
last
awesome.
10 years.
That's great.
Okay. And he told me, like, I honestly don't really care if I grow now.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, he's at a point where enough is enough, right? And so many of us, and I don't mean to be flippant by saying this, but so many of us have reached that point, but we actually don't even realize we've reached that point. Because, how much is how much do you need, right? And so, if there's food on the table, a roof over your head, your bills are paid, which unfortunately for many of us includes our loans, then like what else do you need?
It's funny,
So
this morning I was talking to one of my best friends who's a nine-figure entrepreneur, okay? Very, very successful. And we were talking about actually using ChatGPT to create visuals of building our dream houses, okay? And he and I were talking, what his would be, what mine would be, and how all the cool things and how our families could play together in these houses and stuff. And this is coming from someone who has everything. He has plane, he has meals made for him, he has private trainer, he has whatever he wants, he has it, right? He's got boats and all this kind of stuff. And he said, isn't it funny? He said, I love dreaming about this stuff. Sometimes dreaming about it is actually better than even getting it.
Oh, 100%.
And there's research on that. I mean, some
Oh,
of that research
100%.
too is like, once people get to that mountain, then they say, what's the next mountain,
No,
right?
it's true. It's true. It's true. And, even going back to what I was just saying a minute ago about how much is enough. I mean, look, you're listening, ladies and gentlemen, to a guy who, had everything taken away from him when I became disabled, and all of a sudden, I thank goodness I had good disability insurance, but it wasn't what I was making prior to that. And I've had other situations in my career where, even a couple of years ago, where I thought, I was going to be doing XYZ, and then all of a sudden things change. And I can tell you, now granted, my spouse makes a great living, but I can tell you that I've had several times in my life where the wool was pulled, the, excuse me, the rug was pulled out from under me financially. And not only did I survive, but I realized how we just accommodate to whatever level of income we have.
So true.
And, technically, for now, I'm making less than I made in a long time. And I'm not wanting for anything. Things are
Yeah, fine.
good. I'm happy. But on
Yeah.
paper, you'd be like, whoa, that's a big pay cut. But it's not. It has everything to do with how we accommodate to where we are. And look, everybody's situation is different. There's kids to support. Look, it makes sense that you may be like, yeah, easy for you to say. All I'm saying is I've had the mental experience of having my income change dramatically, and I survived, and I believe in you all, and I believe you all can as well. I also want to talk about this. I didn't mention this to you earlier, but I started chuckling and kind of got angry all at the same time. So I was on Dental Nachos today. Wasn't angry at them because I love them. There was a team member, and I'm assuming it's a team member based on the thread, that was sharing a note on their practice management system that they had a patient call up who was nasty, who apparently had what they felt was an emergency. The patient was told they couldn't be seen till noon. The patient said, I don't care, Doctor always sees me. I'll be there at 10. She shows up at 10, and what does the doctor do? Took the patient back. So, how the heck does that support your team? And I've heard so many times, not only in my years at Spear, but with my private coaching clients, oh, well, we have a template, but my team just continues to put people in. My first question has become, how often have you done similar, right? To fit somebody in, because they're going to model your behavior. And I posted on Nachos and I said, what I'm hearing in this is two things. Number one, you just reinforced to this patient that their behavior was acceptable, which it clearly wasn't in terms of their demeanor. And number two, you just basically told your team that you don't have their back. Like, that's not a good day at the office, in my opinion.
And going back to my trinity, the holy trinity of what dentists are missing, one of them is boundaries. And that is such a great opportunity to set a boundary. Listen, I feel for the dentist.
Oh,
I
100%.
feel for the team member because when I was in my burnout, I would have done the same thing. I feel like I have to give everything. I have to make it work. You know, these people are counting on me. I have to take every patient. I probably would have done the same thing. Now I wouldn't. But it's because I've practiced setting boundaries. I've gotten better at it. I'm not 100%, but I've definitely gotten better at it. In a previous episode, we talked about how one of the boundaries I started with was saying no to the people at Costco when you're walking out of Costco that's trying to sell you a new kitchen or new solar or new whatever, right? It's so simple, but honestly, I know people that they will stop every time, even though they have no intention of getting a new kitchen, they just can't say no to anybody.
And
And it's a
I've heard it,
skill, everybody. Come on, it's a skill.
I've heard it said a couple of times, and I really love this, that no is a complete sentence. Now, granted, the way I was raised, I can't help myself and put a thank you after that. No, thank you. However, it's a complete sentence. And so, we need to look in the mirror relative to our own boundaries and expectations and how we're communicating those with our team. But I think my point is that if you're feeling in a state of burnout and you feel like your schedule is spooled out of control, your team isn't necessarily helping manage the stress of the day by constantly putting patients in, one of the first places I would go to, not that I'm saying I'm automatically blaming myself, but I do need to make sure that the behaviors that I'm modeling aren't a contributing factor to this out of control truck that's rolling down the mountain.
You know, what's funny is last night I was so it was at a dental lab. It was at a local dental lab that was supporting it. And after I gave my speech, I think he's the manager of the lab or some high executive came and said, you know, would you come back and speak to our laboratory
Oh,
technicians
that's
and give the
cool.
same lecture? And I said, yeah. And actually, Noble Biocare, who sponsored me last night, that's another one that I should have shouted out.
Oh,
Noble
yeah.
Biocare paid for me to come, even
That's
though
awesome.
I wasn't helping with implants at all.
That's great.
And they even offered to actually cover my honorarium for the dental lab too,
That's
because
cool.
it's a large account for Nobel as well. But this executive came up to me and said, you know, I realized after seeing you speak that I haven't taken care of myself physically, mentally. And I'm lashing out at people. And because of that, we've lost, you know, people have left. And so it was just like what you were saying, is like look internally first. And I told him my story, which was I thought the same thing. If you asked me at my burnout, I would say, oh my gosh, my team, they're just, oh, they never listen and they're doing this and they're doing that. And when I look back on it, you know, some things they were doing wrong and, you know, could have done better. But so much of it was my reaction to
Oh,
what
yeah.
doing, my lack of setting expectations, my lack of setting boundaries, my lack of having psychological safety, something that I learned from you. And just like how we've talked about before, I wasn't focusing on what I could control. I was just worrying. I was in my, my circle of concern. I wasn't in my circle of influence, right? So I was just, oh my gosh, they're doing this, they're doing this. They're making me feel like this, blaming everybody else for my own feelings. And now, in hindsight, and what I shared with this lab executive was, first of all, that it was really cool that he was saying that, and very vulnerable for him to say he needs to make some changes to help his team more.
No, I think that's great. I think that's great. And you created, by virtue of your teachings and by virtue of the invitation from the oral surgery, the psychological safety for him to feel comfortable enough to say something, right?
That's exactly
Because
right, yeah.
you talk about not being alone and making sure you have a dental friend, phone a friend that's dentist, that's dental. Just the very idea that somebody that he respects, this oral surgeon, had you come in. Like it all becomes a ripple or a domino effect. It's pretty wild because, and we've heard this in our live course, Lightside Live, how many times have we heard, I thought I was alone? How many
Yeah.
times I thought nobody was going through the same thing? And it's a common humanistic trait, I think, to always think you're alone, regardless of what it is that is drawing a negative emotional response, whatever that may be.
And I think that comes back to the theme of today, which is the times are changing. It's like the more times this topic is discussed, whether it's in live events, webinars, in articles, I published two peer-reviewed journals about mental health within the last 18 months or so. So the more people are seeing it, they're seeing our posts on Instagram, they're seeing other people's posts, they're seeing this discussion on Facebook groups, they're seeing it at CE courses, they're seeing it through dental associations, they're seeing it through the ADA. We have an ADA president that's talking a lot about substance abuse now and mental health. It starts to become normal. And when it's normal, there's not this cloak of secrecy over it to where we're going to change the statistics on suicide. It's going
Oh,
to change
100%.
in the positive.
And I would challenge everybody listening. We in society, we say, "Oh, hey, how you doing, Kyle? It's good to see you, blah blah blah. How you doing?" And we don't really expect an answer, whether we like it or
Yes.
not.
Yeah,
But
usually
I
the
would
answer
challenge.
is, how you doing?
Yeah, I would challenge everybody listening on here, if you are interested in making a commitment to your own emotional and mental health, when you do go to somewhere next time, you say, "Hey, how you doing?" And someone says, "Oh, I'm good." Really? Really? How are you doing? I've been struggling a little bit, blah, 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 blah. What about you?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. I sent you that book the other day, Super Communicators, and I listened to the author on a podcast. And one of the things he was talking about was one of the things super communicators do is they don't have fluff questions, really. So like he was saying a lot of people just talk about the weather. Like, oh, it's well, we're in Seattle, so of course it's raining. And he was giving examples on how you could transition from a fluff kind of small talk question to a question that really asks something deeper. And he said, something like, oh, yeah, it does always rain here. What made you move to Seattle? And he said, just something like that, which isn't an invasive question at all. Within one or two questions, you could get to finding out someone's real values. He was talking about, I can't remember if it was a study or if it was a group of people that were doing something, but they said they would try to sit on planes and I think it was within two questions, try to find out what people's dreams were, like what their dreams in life were. And one of the questions that he, one of the ways he talked about this was, you sit down, you meet someone new, and they say, "Oh, what do you do?" Right? And the example he gave was, "Well, I'm an accountant." And then the next question that I asked, which would be question two, is, "Well, did you always want to be an accountant?" And usually it's like, "Well, no, when I was a kid, I really wanted to do this, and that was really my dream. But then, I got married, and I really needed something that would pay the bills. And my mom or my dad's an accountant, so I thought I would do that." And so it's kind of interesting that you're talking about that is, if you become a better communicator, you can support your colleagues better.
Totally. It's interesting. I talk about this in my lecture around if you were to meet somebody in a and out and about, what would you say you did for a living? And I've done this from a in a survey fashion. And the times I've done this survey in rooms of, several hundred up to one room was about 600 or so, over 90% ish, that's approximate, would put up their hand when I asked, if I were to meet you, would you use some type of label, dentist, hygienist, et cetera, et cetera? And like everybody, everybody raises their hand. When I meet somebody out and they say, what do you do? My answer is, I help people get out of their own way on stages with their teams and one-on-one. And, talk about a super communicator. I've talked before that, I kind of befriended this Major League Baseball player in the middle of an airport when I answered that way, but he was a super communicator because he looked at me and he goes, tell me more about that. And so he started asking me questions. What do you like about that? How'd you get started? Blah, blah, blah. And I told him this. His name's Connor Overton. He's a pitcher for the Mets. He's a really great guy. He was asking me all these questions. And I pegged the dude for an IT professional. Don't ask me why. And so finally, when I got around to asking him, what do you do for a living? And he says, I'm a Major League Baseball player. I couldn't ask him anything other than, tell me more about that. And so then I started really changing the way I would normally interact with another human being casually. And I flipped it to, how long have you been doing that? What do you like most about it? How, did you always want to be, did you always want to play baseball professionally? So it created this really memorable conversation, I believe, for both of us, because we both were in this place of trying to connect in a different way. You could describe it as deeper, but let's go with different, in a different way to kind of get to know that other human being that is on this delayed flight from Charlotte to Phoenix. So,
Super cool. Well, I think today has been interesting. Today's a very positive topic. Some of our episodes can be negative just because we're creating more awareness of problems, which ultimately is a positive, right? Creating that awareness. But sometimes we do, many times we do talk about some of the negative aspects. Usually we talk about how to overcome them or how to think about them or how to get through something. But I think today is just extremely positive. The first state having mental health, continuing education as part of their core is a huge step.
Oh,
It's been
absolutely.
something that you and I have kind of been lobbying for socially, not actually lobbying, but socially in courses and on Instagram and whatnot. And this may be the first domino.
I would agree.
Or, like many things, California leads in a lot of, I don't know, like political areas. It's like once it approves something in California, oftentimes it gets approved in other states because of just the sheer population. Not that it's always right or good, but sometimes, California tends to be a leader in different things. So in just a few years, this may be something that is everywhere. And I think the next step, now that it's considered core CE and not elective CE, is getting it as a requirement. That is something that we really want to push for. And like I said, but like I've been saying for years, actually, this doesn't need to be huge. If you could do two CEs, but make that required, similar to what North Carolina is doing, their substance abuse and mental health, but like require 2 hours every year, every 2 years. I think we could really save our profession. We could have a lot more dentists that are thriving. And everybody gets better that way.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think that's great.
Well, if you guys liked what we talked about today, and again, you'd like to spend more time with us, May 9th and 10th, coming out with Martin and I, you can find out more at wellnessanddentistry.com. Go to our links, and you can see the first link, which is our Lightside Live course. And we hope to see you in Irvine, California. And we hope that you got a lot of value out of this. If you got value out of this and you want to share this positivity, what happened recently in California, send this to a colleague that would enjoy this. I know if Martin sends me a book recommendation or a podcast or a song or something, I immediately goes to the top of my list. So we would appreciate if you did that as well. Also, if you haven't written us a review, we would love to have a review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us spend more time and effort into this podcast. So we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.
Bye-bye.